This is America Weekend. I'm Mike Bennett. Jimmy Sturr, a 16-time Polka Music Grammy winner, has many friends in country music, including Willie Nelson.
And I'm lucky. And we mentioned on the earlier segment that I did a lot with Willie. But, you know, after that, I got to be friends with the Oak Ridge Boys. And I said to them, hey, guys, would you do a record? They did an album with us, and we won a Grammy for it. And then I went Charlie Daniels. But I'm lucky, man. I took all these country guys. All of them love polka music. And that's how I got to record with them. I mean, Alison Krauss, Bela Fleck. Of course, I started years ago. It's pretty cool to think that they respect our kind of music. And that's what, you know, from the heart is why, you know, I enjoy the polka music. Although everybody thinks I'm Polish, you know, I'm 100% Irish, but that doesn't matter. No matter what nationality you are, you can enjoy polkas. And then always the second question, somebody like you said, well, how did you get into polka music? Well, I've always lived in Florida, New York. And 85% of the people that lived in Florida, New York were Polish. They came from Europe to work on the black dirt with all the onion farms. And that's how they came to my area and, of course, brought their traditions with them, one of which was their music. But back then, our high school had polka bands. Goshen, New York, right next door, Warwick, New York, Chester, New York, they all had polka bands playing for their high school dances. And at one time, the local radio station was WALL in Middletown, New York. And Middletown had a polka show every day and played polka music every single day. And, of course, everybody heard about those three-day Polish weddings. And that's how I got into playing. I play these three-day Polish weddings. I go, you know, on a Friday night, on a Saturday night, on a Sunday afternoon. And that's how I really got started in this kind of music.
Well, that's incredible. I didn't realize. So when you did one wedding, you're really doing three gigs.
But you only got paid for one.
Oh, okay.
But back then, it didn't matter. You always had such a good time. It was a wonderful time.
So do people thinking you're Polish come up and try to talk Polish to you?
Oh, all the time. And it's something, it doesn't happen like it used to. But, you know, it's funny. Years ago, somebody come up to me and say, oh, and they talk to me in Polish. And I say, well, I'm not really Polish. I'm 100% Irish. They get upset at me. Holy crows. And I didn't know what to say to them. But then I explained to them how I got into the music. And then they understood. But, yeah, I used to get a lot of abuse.
And you haven't been to Poland, have you?
Only twice. I played in Poland twice. It was an experience like you never saw before. Both times I went, I did it during the communist days. And we played in the first time in Warsaw. And they have what they call Kongresowa Hall, which is the Hall of Congress, which is their equal to Carnegie Hall in New York City. We played there. We had sold out 2,900 people. And they were half Polish who didn't speak English. And we brought with us on this tour approximately 550 people. And they told me ahead of time, do not play any song that's political. Only do what you're known. So I said, okay. But I looked out at the audience way up on the top. They had these soldiers marching back and forth in the theater with machine guns. But I could see the people sitting next to their relatives from Poland that we brought with us, you know, just talking and everything. And they'd explain to them, you know, some of the things we were doing because they didn't understand English. And at the end, I mean, the people were just having such a great time. I remember some of the words I said. I said one of the things, I said, you know, it's a shame the whole world couldn't be sitting up in the balcony right now looking down on two countries that don't agree politically with each other, but can sit next to each other, laugh together, cry together. Everybody was just wild. And I went right into God Bless America. The place went nuts. When I got off stage, I thought, am I going to get a beating on this one? The guy that told me don't play anything political came up to me, hugged me. He's crying. And he had just come like 6 months before that. He was the leader or the director of the theater in Paris. And I don't remember the name of it. He booked me in Paris. So we went to Paris and played in Paris at their theater. But it was such a great, great feeling that two countries, you know, of course, we didn't agree politically, but that we sat together, cried together, laughed together. It was an incredible, incredible day.
So you've got to write a book if you haven't already.
Oh, yeah. They just released an autobiography on me. It's been out for about 6 or 8 months. It's called The Life and Times of Jimmy Sturr.
Oh, wow. I got to get a copy of that. Jimmy, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and I hope to see you soon.
With Jimmy Sturr, I'm Mike Bennett. You're listening to America Weekend.
America Weekend. Order in the court.
Have you ever signed a lease? This is attorney Jay Coleman with The Final Verdict. Susan signed a 1-year lease to rent a house in the downtown area. About 4 months into her lease, a nightclub opened across the street. Although Susan loves her house, now she can't seem to get any sleep. She told the landlord that she was going to have to break the lease. He said, forget it. At the very least, she would forfeit her hefty security deposit. In this case, who's right and who's wrong, and why? Stay tuned for The Final Verdict. When you rent a home, you have a reasonable expectation of peace and quiet. If the opening of a nightclub was totally unforeseen by Susan when she signed the lease, she can claim frustration of purpose. Susan shouldn't have any problem breaking her lease under these circumstances. And that's The Final Verdict.
Think Green. Harrison with you. New research shows that people are more attracted to companies involved with positive social and environmental change, according to Ad Age magazine. Though many would argue that companies don't have to be responsible for anything other than profits, research again proves 77% of Americans consider companies' commitments to social issues when deciding whether to take the job or not. And the same 77% also refuse to work at companies with negative corporate responsibility practices. Even in cutthroat industries like retail, employers such as Starbucks and Whole Foods hold on to employees longer by offering part-timers health insurance along with a published social vision, in addition, of course, to profits. Is it a surprise that doing good does good? From the Greeniverse.
Think Green with Harrison at thinkgreenradio.com.
If you're an inventor who would like to attempt to have your idea or invention patented and submitted to industry, call InventHelp. They have free information for you. Call 1-800-405-9878. That's 1-800-405-9878.